Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Paramatma Sadharva Adhyayana 2 Adhikarna 6. The Jiva is a doer and enjoyer. Vritti. Next, the Jiva's nature as an enjoyer, experiencer, is elaborated. The Jiva, being a conscious object, experiences happiness or suffering. In the conditioned state, the Jiva experiences suffering because of identifying with material objects. Whereas in his original pure state, he experiences bliss in serving the Supreme Lord. Thus, the Jiva is called an enjoyer. Anucheda 36. Just as the Lord is an enjoyer, experiencer, since he has consciousness, the Jiva is an enjoyer, since he has a form of consciousness, chit-rupa. Bhokkhaditve sukha dhukhanam purusham prakritev param. They say that the Supreme Lord, superior to Prakriti, is the cause of enjoyment and suffering of the Jiva. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.26.8. Udriti. Srila Prabhupada. The living entity is the cause of his own suffering. But he can also be the cause of his eternal happiness. When he wants to engage in Krishna consciousness, a suitable body is offered to him by the internal potency. The spiritual energy of the Lord. When he wants to satisfy his senses, a material body is offered. Thus, it is his free will to choose to accept a spiritual body or a material body. But once the body is accepted, he has to enjoy or suffer the consequences. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.26.8, purport. The verb vidu, they know, is understood from the previous sentence. Yeah. Sorry.
When there is a free will, yeah? Means, suppose there is a Jiva, I say, okay, I want to enjoy, so there is a material body, there is no possibility to change the will.
No possibility to change. Of course, at any time they can change the will. But the point is when you have the material body, that's specifically for engaging the senses. And so then when you change the will and how you're applying yourself, then that then will develop the spiritual body. But it means you have to give up one for the other. You can't have two at once. You know, it's not like you have, you know, two sets of clothes and, you know, do I wear this, do I wear that? No. It's a matter of you're in the material body, you'll be there until you leave that. But then you have the opportunity to transfer to a spiritual body.
It's always that we can say more or less at the time of death that we select, we have the desire for one or the other.
No, it means why would you be absorbed in Krishna unless there's the opportunity that you have that now you can take up the spiritual platform. Yeah. So it's not just that the time of death is where you transfer from one to the other. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that you're not working on the principle of cultivating that mentality. Because it's the mentality that produces the spiritual material body.
Yes, yes.
Like that. So unless you have the proper mentality, then it doesn't work.
Yes.
You know. So it's not a matter of, Ooh. It's not a matter of, a whimsical kind of thing. This form or that form or which one, but it's a matter of the mentality. You know, it's just like, what taste do you want? Then that's what you eat. You know, you want something salty, then you eat salty things. You want something sweet, you eat sweet things. You know, it's not a matter of just kind of whimsical. See, we're keeping that kind of mentality because we're thinking of, you know, in the same context of enjoyer.
Yes.
That by this, by this position, you know, what will give me the greatest enjoyment? You know, since we are an enjoyer. But the thing is, are we looking at it in the context of Krishna? Because in the context of Krishna, that's where you get the spiritual form. But if you're looking at the context of yourself, that doesn't generate a spiritual form. You know, because if we're thinking, oh, I want this spiritual body because I'll get more enjoyment, or I want this spiritual body because that's more prestigious, or things like that, then the difficulty comes up is in material, you know, that sense of enjoyment and prestige, those are material bodies. And so then one will stay within that context. Does that make sense? So that's why the sahajiyas and that, they're not developing spiritual bodies. Because they're trying to enjoy the spiritual experience. That's their main thing. You know, means you're involved in the spiritual experience, you will enjoy. But it's not about enjoying the spiritual, it's about creating Krishna's enjoyment. You know, it's just like, let us say, just in the general category, the mother will prepare, let's say, a program for the child. You know, some party or something like that. It's about seeing that the child is happy. Not that they set all this up so the mother will enjoy. You know, yeah, she likes parties, so now here's another opportunity. Here's an excuse because, you know, the kid's birthday is there. You know, I'm saying there's a different mentality. So it's just a matter of, at the time of death is where you switch from one plane to the next, or one platform to the next, from the material to the spiritual. But the development of the spiritual body is based on the attitude. And we have the attitude to serve and please Krishna, that will cultivate the spiritual form. Right? It's not that we have the form first and then we see, oh, do I like this one? Or I check this out? Or, you know, how many days do I have to return it? You know, like that. Do we have a, you know, 10 days? I'm not sure if that's enough, you know, like that. And does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like that. It's not like going out and, you know. Okay. Kapila spoke thus the verse. Sarva Sambhadini. The jiva as a doer in his spiritual state is discussed. What else can be said? Surpassing the bliss of Brahman, the jiva attains happiness as a doer. Right? So why bringing out this doer thing? Because we're always talking about how we're not the doer. Because the we're looking at it, doing means my enjoyment. You know, like that. I'm trying to be the enjoyer. So then you're pointing out is that, yeah, it means, okay, and why are you the enjoyer? I did the work, I got the result. But actually, if the modes of nature are carrying it out, or Krishna's potency is carrying it out, can you actually say you're the doer? But here, the point is being out as the doer means he's a conscious living entity. So being conscious of things, therefore he experiences them. And because you experience them, then you enjoy. So he is involved in a process of something. Right? And so then on the material platform, then everybody's going to say they're the doer. It's when you consider the spiritual and whether they say they're the doer or not. Right? So we're saying the doer from the aspect of that he has senses on the spiritual platform and he acts. And on the material platform, it's the soul that is desiring, has the willpower. Maybe the modes of nature carry it out, but it's still being carried out according to his will. Right? So we have to see is that it's the soul, and then there's the external energy. Then in the spiritual platform, then he has spiritual form and senses, which he is then, according to his will, is engaging in Krishna service. Right? Otherwise, then there's this concept that he's doing nothing. Right? He has no position. Right? There is no spiritual forms. There is no individuality. So from that aspect, we're bringing out this point of him being the doer. Of course, ultimately, no, mechanically, it's going on by the internal or external potency. But the point is it's the jiva who is conscious and therefore is getting the credit of that. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, we put too much on that mechanical side, then we, again, tend to go towards the impersonal. Right? It means he's an individual, conscious, living entity who makes his choices. Does that make sense? You know, here we have material bodies, we do that with there. In the spiritual world, we have spiritual bodies. So,
this is one of the, the key point of the impersonalists. They don't accept that the jiva has a free will.
Yes, yes. Well, because technically the jiva doesn't exist, so it's just illusions. So then technically if that's there, there's no jivas, it's just illusion is acting. Yes. But then if illusion is acting and you don't exist, then what's the point? Why would you be trying to attain that? Because if you are attaining to the Brahman platform, but actually, technically speaking, you're from the avidya shakti or illusion, you know? And so then it's the illusion that's having these pastimes. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll say, oh, it's Brahman having these pastimes. Mm-hmm. But no. It's illusions having these pastimes. Brahman is unchanging. But what they don't get is, well, where does that illusion come from? So they're fairly messed up. You know, they use their logic very nicely on a platform that already started off as bogus. It's like the modern scientists. They very analytically study what it is they've decided is observable. But their premise on observing is already wrong. Because they're taking it that because they're observing it, they get perfect observation. Yes. But their senses are imperfect. They're saying it's objective, but they're working with their mind. They're accepting and rejecting. Yes. So you can understand it's subjective. But, you know, so they're working on a subjective platform with imperfect senses. And not even understanding the field that they're looking at. You know, it's just like, let us say an ant, you know, Professor Ant comes along and he's going to do a great analytical study of this table in the middle of the room. And possibly through his, you know, telescope and all that, he's going to check out, you know, the furniture around the room and the, you know, the fireplace and that weirdo, you know, furry thing that sits on the hearth there and, you know, stuff like that. And from this, he's going to understand the origin of the universe. You know, so that's what's going on. He's so proud. No, I can see because I can see. I understand everything. You know? Yeah. So they're already starting on a wrong premise. Yes. And then they analyze it very nicely. So the Mayavadis are the same. They start on a wrong premise. Yes. And then after that, then analyze and talk about logic and being spiritual and all this. Even though they're starting off, their position they're starting from is completely bogus. It's just like the living entity thinks I'm the controller and enjoyer. He's already starting from a bogus position.
Yes.
And then within that, then he works very hard. Yeah? Yes.
Srila Prabhupada, in one lecture, he explains the position of the Brahmana, and he says that don't think that the Brahmana is by default on the highest level of perception, or highest level of knowledge. Mm-hmm. He uses knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
He says no, he is paroksha level. He has to rise up to aparoksha and anadokshaja.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look from the bottom, then he's on the second level.
Right.
But if we look from the top, he's three levels below.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it depends where we put our...
Okay, the vyasti or the samasti.
Yes, perspective. Mm. So materialists, like you explained, they think, okay, education is better than no education, mm-hmm. which is true, mm-hmm. but that's the second level from the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, and they think that's all it is.
Yeah.
Material education, but Prabhupada makes that point. No, you have to rise up mm-hmm. to at least fourth level, which is adokshaja. Mm-hmm. If not that, then upper kriya.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. The bliss for your servant available by from meditating on your lotus feet or from hearing about your pastimes from the devotees is not available in your form of greatness known as Brahman. What to speak of the happiness of those who fall from the pleasures of Swarga? Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.10. Right, so the bliss on the spiritual platform is not as much as the bliss on the transcendental platform. That's the whole point. See, we're used to this idea of just dealing with the surroundings, the field of action. But the field of action is created, you know, by the influence of the Sandini potency on the external energy. Then you get the 14 worlds, and that's going to be your field of activity. It'll create the bodies, the 8,400,000 species, the environments they're in, everything like that. So that's what we're looking at. So then if you go to the spiritual platform, the same position will be that of Brahman. So we're trying to take the Brahman side of it rather than the Dham side of it. Because Dham means then something's going on there. Right? And so then that means these things. So... because if I stick to that Brahman aspect, then I don't have to acknowledge that the Lord's there, and I can be God and be the enjoyer. So I can be the controller and enjoyer on the spiritual platform. You know, at least in my mind, you know, that's how we're thinking. But in reality, that's not how it works. Yes?
Another interesting feature, why people choose to worship Brahman or demigods mm-hmm. as a karmis, is that you can actually perform the ritual, you can worship
mm-hmm.
without surrender.
Mm. Yes.
But with Krishna it doesn't work.
Yes, that's true.
So that for jnanis and for karmis, that will be very attractive always. If mm-hmm. you have to do some mechanics, get the results without developing relationship. But with Krishna, you have to develop relationship, then see how process is working.
Mm. Yes, yeah. That's it. Yeah, because except without pleasing Krishna, then Krishna won't reveal himself. So that means you have to surrender. But then the material energy, then I don't have to surrender. I just have to apply my intelligence and senses, and I think I'm getting, you know, so many results. That's interesting. Yeah, with no actual surrender. You know, it means you maybe do some temporary kind of application, but you're not actually surrendering to the superior position. Like Hiranyakashipu, he's you know, doing his austerities and getting Lord Brahma's blessings. But after that, you don't hear him, you know, that he's always talking about Brahma and how great he is and fabulous. And yeah, interesting. Yeah. So that makes sense. So, in other words, we try to maintain our mundane consciousness even on the spiritual platform.
Yes.
So that's why you see that. So the acharyas so strongly talk about this impersonal position. You know, anything below the devotee's position, they talk very strongly about. Yes. Because by nature, we'll try to keep it. You know, our concepts of mundane morality, our concepts of mundane spirituality. You know, these things we will try to maintain. Because then it means we don't have to surrender. We don't have to accept the supremacy of Krishna. right? Because if there's the supremacy of Krishna, then there's not. Then we have the point is that I have to surrender. I have to serve. So. This is the doer beyond Prakriti. The jiva attains happiness while destroying suffering. That is indicated through the example of the carpenter. The carpenter, even without using an axe, acts as a doer in his house when he drinks and eats. By this he destroys suffering and attains bliss. In this way, the jiva as an enjoyer is established. Even in proximity to Prakriti, this jiva does not have a predominance of Prakriti, since he has a form opposite of unconscious Prakriti, a form which communicates with the Lord. That form is predominated by the spiritual Lord. Thus, there is predominance of happiness perceived through the Sarup, since a jiva reveals itself to itself. That is the meaning of swadrik, self-seeing. Thus, the jiva has been explained as a knower, doer, and enjoyer, shrutis. Because knower means that's sat, doer means that's chit, enjoyer means it's ananda. So that's why these three are being established. So they're being brought out from the point of establishing that's what he is.
Yeah.
Right? So he reveals himself to himself, because if he's not a knower and he can't be conscious, how does he know himself? So he, like if you look in the mirror, you're able to see yourself. So you reveal yourself, mm-hmm. right? But at the same time, as Prabhupada points out, is unless the sun's up and there's light, you can't see yourself in the mirror.
Yes. Yes.
Right? But we're not emphasizing this part here. We're simply trying to establish the soul and what his position is. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to bring it forward into, you see, as he's taking it step by step, that there is a soul. Mm-hmm. Then, having established that there is a living entity, then that he's sat, then after that he's chit, and then after that he's ananda. Then after that's established, then he'll establish he's servant of the Lord. So that's it's just a very logical step-by-step going through the process. Because otherwise they don't accept. And so you have to establish the existence of the soul, the nature of the soul and everything. Then once you've done that, now you can talk about the spiritual. You know, the actual transcendental position. Shrutis are as follows. Yato va vedam jigranti sa atma. That which knows, I smell this, is the atma. Chandogya Upanishad 8:12-14. Katama atmeti yoyam vijnanamaya praneshu hridyantar jyoti purushaha. Who is the atma? Yajnavalkya said, the person who is full of knowledge, who is internal light in the heart within the pranas. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 4:37. Esha hi drashta sprashta shrota rasita grata manta bodha karta vijnanatma purushaha. The jiva is the seer, the toucher, the hearer, the taster, the smeller, the thinker, the comprehender, the doer, and the knower. Prashna Upanishad 4:9. So you see, is all these things is what's going on. So sometimes one verse may be, he's the hearer, or another one, the taster. So this one, you see them all in one place. So Prashna Upanishad 4:9. So the position of the jiva, then... is being brought out. And we see, but these qualities, they're like Krishna and this and that. Yes, because we're a part and parcel of Krishna. But the point is we're small Brahman, and he's not part of Brahman.
Yes.
We're a small knower, he's the unlimited knower. We're a small seer, he's the unlimited seer. We're the small taster, he's the big taster, like this. You know? Vriti, having discussed the nature of the jiva as a doer and enjoyer, right, because the first he had to establish that he exists, and he's conscious, and he's understanding himself, and then from there what's around him, and everything. Then you have to do it that he does things. Right? Yeah. Priti, having discussed the nature of the jiva as a doer and enjoyer, the next Adhikarna discusses on the jiva's subservience to the Paramatma. Right? So now this is the next step. This means these other ones they don't want to accept. Why don't they want to accept them? Because they're very logical and straightforward. You know, the verses say and this and that, and so yeah. But that is the reason they don't accept. It's not because that's the important part. The important part is this next one. The next Adhikarna discusses on the jiva's subservience to the Paramatma. That's what they don't want to be. They don't want to surrender to the Lord. And so because of that, then how can you surrender to the Lord? Because you as a person, surrendering to the Lord is a person. So the Lord's not a person, he's just Brahman, you're not a person. Then, you know, like that, in fact, you're also Brahman, so that way you become God. But because, you know, you are Brahman, then there's going to be the Ananda and everything. So you'll try to get everything, all you said, that eternity, that knowledge, that bliss, all there, yes, without surrender to the Lord. Yes. You know? Does that make sense? You know, we want to go to the program without buying a ticket.
Yes.
You know, so we'll say, there's no tickets. And what do you mean it's everybody's world? What is this sense of ownership and this and that? And, well, you know, what about this capitalism and all that? Can't we just all get along together? Can't we just all appreciate that? All I'm trying to do is get a free ticket. You know, so that's the whole point, is that without paying the price of surrender, they want to get their so-called, you know, superior position. Yes?
So what is the logic behind, if the jiva in a liberated state is equal to the jiva in a conditioned state, then what is the matter of practice? It's just, what is it?
It means what we're saying or what they're saying?
No, what they say. Liberated, we are Brahma. Conditioned, we are the same Brahma. Then what's the actual difference? Is it a difference of experience? Is this is what they say?
I think it from what it is it'll be down to the experience, because you're focusing on the material or the upadis, you know, the impersonalist. Let's take from the impersonalist, by the way, is that therefore you're going to only be able to experience the nature of the upadi. As much as the upadi has, that's as much as you can experience. You know, if we're talking just generically. But if you see everything connected with Brahman, then you're able to experience that unlimited aspect of Brahman. But that would only be the Brahmavadis. For the Mayavadis, then technically as you get down to this point, then what they're saying about the liberated jiva and the conditioned jiva. But in their mind, the jivas don't exist. We're illusion. And so then, therefore, then that's the whole point, is how does the jiva, you know, they're saying goes back into Brahman, but if they're actually produced by illusory energy, you know, some kind of illusion or ignorance, then the point is they don't exist in the first place. So how could you merge into Brahman if you don't exist? Right? Because all it is you've taken how you say, Buddhism and just put it in a new package. You know, you put it in a new package with, you know, bright colors and say it's organic and, you know, stuff like that. It's the same thing. You say, the Western thing, you know, old wine, new bottle.
Yes.
Yeah.
However, you repack the Buddhism, it's empty inside. So.
Yes, that's the whole thing. So when you get down to it, then who is there? Because if they say, no, but we're Brahman, but the point is, even if you're part of Brahman, you're still Brahman. So only Brahmavadis can understand this. Mayavadis, then they won't understand. No, but it's an illusion of your existence. You're just part of that unlimited Brahman. But the point is you're already Brahman. So then if you're already Brahman, what's the problem? Because you say you don't know you're Brahman. But then the point is how can ignorance cover Brahman? And then how is it you can overcome this ignorance when Brahman can't? The overall Brahman is covered by illusion, you get a jiva. But how is it that jiva himself can overcome this Brahman? You know, it's just like you have the same kind of problem in some of the modern religious points, is that, you know, God's made the world, he's the supreme controller, this, that, blah, all this kind of things. But at the same time, is then the devil runs the world and the God can do nothing about it. But the jiva themselves can transcend you know, the devil's influence, even though God can't control the devil. And we can come to that, you know, platform of beatitude. How does this work? You know, so that's the whole thing, is their false ego is way bigger than what is deserved. You know, but at the same time, we talk about the real nature, you know, Yatme, he is that unlimited, bright, you know, how you say, liberated position. You know, then that we'll have a problem with. But at the same time, is we're quite confident of our abilities. So this is the point. At this point, this is where it falls apart. So then, based on that bogus kind of position, then as you start, then it all becomes wrong. Even though if they apply it very nicely. So that's why we have to be careful of any kind of improper understanding. You know, like if we base a social or position on our upadis, then we're already starting with an improper, bogus position. So now anything that you come up with, no matter how logical and nice it is, it's still faulty in its foundation. Right? So that's where these difficulties come up, is that we accept the bogus foundation, and then we try to build on it very nicely. You know, because the foundation is the big problem. Yeah, you ever say, you know, when you build a big building, the foundation is huge. It's an amazing thing. And that, and then you know, you start building the building on top of that. So we always kind of want to get by with no foundation. You know, just like I think, where is that place? Somewhere up north there, that there's areas where they live in the permafrost. You know permafrost?
I'm not sure what it is.
Permafrost. I think these places I'm talking about might even be up northern, like in Siberia and stuff. Permafrost means where the ground is permanently frozen.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you don't build a foundation. You just, it's you know, it's solid. So they just build the house directly on the ground. Mm-hmm. You know? Like that. But now a little bit of a problem is there, is nowadays things aren't quite as cold as they used to be. So now the houses, everything are sinking into the ground. Yeah. So it's just, in other words, if we could get away with it, we will. You know? I say, you know, it's just like out in the desert, then they just put up a tent.
Yes.
You know, no need of a foundation,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
No? Yes.
I mean, if we take Sambandha, Vidheya, and Prayojana, then 7 points on the Sambandha,
yes.
One Vidheya, then one Prayojana. So the Sambandha Gyan is a foundation.
Yes, yes.
But to build it up, it takes very large amount of time.
Yes.
That's why most of the devotees, they want to rush into Prayojana and Avideya, but then to build up the foundation, it takes a little longer. So if we do that, then everything can, you know, follows nicely. But if not,
yes,
then we have to come back and build the foundation anyway, because it's not,
yes,
it's not gonna happen.
Yes. So, but the thing is that these can all go on simultaneously, because as much as you've developed the foundation, as much as you are nicely established in the performance of bhakti, and as nicely you're starting to get a taste or a vision of the prayojana. So they all go together. So we've heard that's basic philosophy. We chant, you know, we're not the body, we're the soul. We're servant of Krishna. The ultimate goal is prema, is developing love for Krishna, and the process is chanting. So we've heard the Sambandha Gyan. And we understand this comes in parampara from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. You can't just make it up. And so then, that with that basis, we start to chant and do our services, and we start to get a taste. But at the same time, as we're cultivating these, that's why it's, you know, one of the five main principles, or the five is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees, you know, living in the Dham, worshipping the deity, chanting you those five together. Then you see as practice is going on, experiences are there, but at the same time as you are studying. So that's the problem worked in these practical study times. and then these, you know, classes on the different courses on his books, so that it would go on simultaneously. Because devotees are studying other things, you know, to develop their knowledge and skills, but that all those knowledges and skills only maintain the body, really. You can say, "Is no, no, but I get so much done." No, you're engaging that in the Lord's service, because everything's Krishna, so it can be engaged. But how are you being maintained? Said, "No, no, but I'm using all the management skills and the service of the temple." Okay, yeah. And so now, then, what's your position? Okay, you're the president. Who's maintaining you? You're being maintained because of that. You know, some other department heads being maintained because of that. The brahmachari is maintained because he does his service. So these kind of knowledge and skills are what makes a structure that maintains you, and then you engage that in Krishna's service. It's not direct. Management is never directly Krishna's service. You engage it in Krishna's service, and it becomes spiritualized. You don't, it's not. It's just like a sack of potatoes are not automatically spiritual, right? You know, it's not that you go, well, you want the russet potatoes, or you want the Yukon potatoes. No, I'll take that sack of spiritual potatoes over there. Oh, spiritual, huh? Okay, you know, that'll cost you extra, you know, like that. You know, so it's just the mechanics are the same. You connect it to Krishna, you know. Does that make sense? But you're situating yourself as a brahmachari to develop devotion to Krishna, as a grihastha, as a vanaprastha, as sanya, to develop your love for Krishna. So that's why it's there. The other things, those are what you do to engage, they maintain you. And for Brahmins, there's basically no difference between the ashram and that, but that's Brahmins. Everybody else, there's a difference. So that's why Vaishnavas, when they engage fully in Krishna's service, then they're on that platform of that brahminical platform, then it all gets nicely connected. But you have to understand how that... It means if you want to get technical, you need to understand how it works. If you're keeping it simple, just, yeah, Prabhupada said do this and we do it, then you don't know the technical, it doesn't matter, because you're getting the effect by actually engaging in the conclusion. Right? So in other words, if you follow the conclusion, if you don't understand all the technicalities, that's fine. But if in other areas you're going to get into all the technicalities, you have to balance it with the technicalities in Krishna consciousness. You know, it's just that you're happy with whatever, you know, gets served for prasad, then you're fine. You don't have to worry about menus and technical things and all that. But if you want very specific kinds of food, then you have to worry about all the technicalities of what ingredients and how that's prepared. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that they go together. So we're getting into all this technical knowledge and skills on one side, but if you don't get that technical on the other, it won't balance. If it doesn't balance, it falls off one side. You know, depending on which side is off balance, you fall off into the impersonalism or into the sahajya, one or the other. Like that. Yes.
This seems to be the main difficulty nowadays to educate, you know, Vaishnava community members.
Right.
Because education is a theory. There's no ashram education as such. I mean, for grihasthas, although grihastha is an ashram, but if you ask grihasthas, those who are honest, they say the grihastha, you know, it's just my place to relax or be myself, whatever it means, and like that, they don't see it as an educational environment. So then it becomes one-sided. It's just theory, and people like it. It's a nice theory. And they contemplate for a while, but back to the, you know, real life.
No, that's where you go, real life.
It means nothing.
No, when you say theory, that's then there's real life.
Yeah. So is there a way to educate? Because brahmacharis, they have an ashram training. And then obviously sannyasis, they're on that level, they're you know, they're quite advanced. They can engage themselves.
Right, right. But also vanaprastha.
Yes, vanaprasthas.
Also, okay. But see, the grihastha is just continuing what they learned as brahmacharis.
Yes.
That brings up the next question. What of those who didn't go through brahmacharya? But the point is then they have to know that there's something to gain. So the thing when you say is, oh, it's theory about the education and all that and applying in your life, and the reality is being themselves and, you know, that time to relax and all that. But at the same time, is that not also a theory?
Yes.
The theory that you go to your house, you relax, you can be yourself. It's just like, okay, you're at your house. You can just relax and do whatever you want and completely disregarding anyone else in the family, right? No. So that means your relaxing depends upon, you know, what's going on in the family. And your being yourself, one, you first have to identify yourself, because if you were saying, I'm being myself, then you should be able to say, okay, grihastha you can obviously say, but where is it in the varna thing and what you're doing and what interests you and all these different things? What's your nature? Can you say that? And if you can't, then are you being yourself? What if you're being cheated by yourself? You know, because they say that the jiva swadrik, you know, self-seeing. What if you're also self-cheating like that? You know, and so you've cheated yourself. You're saying, oh, you know, I'm this, you know, how you say, you know, middle-aged guy with a beer belly, you know, but it's not for beer, but, you know, I mean, it's the same kind of position. I sit around in my shorts and my T-shirts and my belly sticks out and all that. And that's who I am. But the point is what if you're not that? So then it's also a theory that they say, I can be myself. Because who is that self? Because you say, I want to wear this shirt. Your wife says, no, you're going to wear this other shirt. You know? And that's a reality. That's not a theory.
But it's connected to the food and everything else.
Yeah. You know. I don't know, just now it's kind of just changed. If you go back some years, a few years, 70%, I think it was 70% of all male clothing was purchased by women.
Now it's more or less the same.
Yeah, so the point is the men don't buy their own clothes because they could buy their own clothes, but it'll be a waste of money because they won't be able to wear it. So in other words, when the wife buys the clothes, you know you can wear those things. It may not be the right one, but you know it's actually wearable at some point. Or the stuff that you buy, you know,
maybe
then there's a good chance you'll never get to wear that. You know, not even when you're sleeping at night. So you know what I'm saying? So there, this idea that, oh, this is real and this is theory, but what they call real is also a theory. It's also an idea in their head that they're trying to realize, but they never realize. So that's the whole point, is that you spend 25, 30 years trying to realize, you know, realize your theory, you know, that becomes, you know, practical for you. But then after 25, 30 years, you see it's not a reality that you'll realize your theory. And so that's what's called vanaprastha. That's why vanaprasthas are considered more mature and wise, because they understand is that what you think you'll get from grihastha ashram, either one, you can't get it, or even if you do get it, it won't give you what you think you'll get from it. And even if you get, you know, once or twice and it seems exciting a few more times, it becomes very ordinary. So that taste is not available. Because why? Because the soul can't gain a taste out of dead matter, out of the material energy. Therefore, only when the living entity connects things to Krishna, then it has some meaning. Like Yudhishthira and the Pandavas, they're connecting their position as Kshatriyas and emperors and that to Krishna. That's how they get a taste. Otherwise, on its own, there's no taste there. Otherwise, why is it all the great kings, then they go to the forest? You know? Like that. They have everything, but they go to the forest. And the others die trying to attain what they think is what they want. Whatever it is, they want it bigger and more and that, and they all die trying to expand. Jarasandha died trying to expand his lordship. So did Kamsa. You know, so did Karna, Duryodhana, everybody. They all died trying to attain what it is, so then it's not attainable. And those that are smart, they understand. I mean, in other words, Buddhi Yoga means you use your brain. You see Krishna's direction, you take that, and then you see it's not possible. Yes?
So, Maharaj, is there a way to educate Grihasthas, those who didn't go through the Brahmachari training?
Is there a way to train Grihasthas that didn't go through Brahmachari training? Yes, but it has to be known that if we're taking that, like you say, if you're taking ashrams as part of the whole spiritual development and training, then it has to be seen that that's what it is. Right? And so it has to be something else. Because if we look at it, okay, how much time is spent actually directly engaging the senses in something that you would actually consider, you know, really good? Right? You know, if you take how many, you know, meals in a day, how much of that meal you're really enjoying yourself. The first few bites are great. So if you eat three times a day, that means, you know, let's say 9 bites a day. Okay, and so those bites, let's say, it depends, okay, you're relaxing, you like that. Even you say 2 minutes, 3 minutes, that's 9 minutes. If we're really being, you know, generous here. Like that, you know, and then that, you know, those few moments where you can, you know, sit down and put your feet up, and that, how many minutes do you get of that before something happens? So 10, 15, 20 minutes a day? Half an hour? You know, I mean, we're being extremely generous here. You know, that's if everything worked out. It means all these things might work out. Like one of the meals might work out, another day a different meal, a different day you can sit down like this, a different day, you know, you actually, you know, got you had the time to get that WD-40 and fix the door so it didn't squeak, and you had that moment, yeah, I accomplished something, you know, I'm the doer. You know, like Jiva Goswami said here, the jiva is the doer. You know, those, but you have to add those up. So it's not that you get that every day. So that might mean half an hour every week or 2 weeks or a month or, you know, but whatever it is, there's something there that's driving you and you feel a taste. That's why one's still there. But what's the rest of the time for then? Because if doing what I want to get, you know, in my theory about Grihastha Ashram, right? You're saying about the theory of that, you know, I'm being myself, I enjoy, it's when I get to relax and all that. But how much of that do you get to do? So that means is, okay, now what about the rest of the time? So that's therefore for devotional development. You know, and even then, the prasad, you're eating, it's connected to Krishna, your interaction with families are connected to Krishna. You know, you're taking care of the house or this or that because it's connected to Krishna. So even those, you'll only get some kind of taste when they're connected. You know, so that means then what's the rest of the time for? So thinking that, then you should be, okay, so if it's to engage in Krishna, how do I do that? That means then, if you know, do. If you don't know, learn. And how do you learn? Therefore, then there's programs. You have house programs or other things or seminars or whatever it is. So we find what it is that particular group of individuals in that particular situation, what works. So what works in one community might be slightly different than another. There's always going to be some general kind of things. You know? So like that. So that's the thing, is that unless that's there, because we talk community, but where's the community? Who actually develops community? You know? Am I developing, you know, how to sit down, you know, that mood of sitting down in your armchair or something like that, or how to sit in your armchair, you know? No. So those things that we call the, you know, what's the purpose of the Grihastha Ashram, that's not being trained. You know, we're not training in Krishna consciousness. So what does that leave? What's the one last final thing that maybe we're getting from community? that community is worthwhile. Right? They're either giving some time or they're giving some money, or best both. And then that's it. And as long as that's going on, then everybody's, in at least in administration, is happy. They feel they've accomplished something. When the question is did they actually? Because if it's not connected to Krishna, they'll say that part's connected, but then you have it connected to the community. They as an individual have come to the temple, done their service, but how have you connected the community? How do they know how to, as a community, live a lifestyle of that of someone who's following, practicing, you know, the Gaudiya Vaishnavism? So in that process, then that side you can say is that's not being addressed. So therefore, to quote from, how you say, Bhavananda Prabhu, you have to put it out into the ether. It says you put it out enough, it starts to have effect. You start talking about it, then was talking about it, then people start to think about it. And if they think about it, then there's feeling about it. If there's feeling about it, then there's willing about it. If there's willing about it, then they actually do something. So that's why Brahmins are the mouth. They put a lot of things out into the ether.
Yeah. They put in, and then they put
out. Yes. Yeah.
It's balanced.
It's balanced. You feed them, they talk about Krishna. Like that. It goes both ways. Yeah. So. Yeah. It's just like if you're in a good mood, do you talk? Yeah. So, what was Yudhishthira Maharaj's instruction at the Rajasuya sacrifice to his assistants when it came to feeding the Brahmins?
Feed them till they laugh.
Feed them till they laugh. So that means then now they're ready to talk. So that's the thing. Yeah, so so in other words, the concept of community is actually not understood at all, because who comes from a background that's from a community? Only religious people. Or if they came, they were living on, let's say, some hippie commune somewhere or something like that. But other than that, then where is community? So that's the problem. Everyone's talking community, but basically speaking, do they have any samskars for community? Probably not, because then the problem is community means there's common values and there's authority. And these are the two exact things that you know, being more up-to-date, more educated, more liberal, that you're vehemently opposed to. All traditions thrown out, all traditional authorities thrown out, and whatever you feel and all that, and whoever you accept, that only is authority. That right there means the very basis of developing community is actually not in your philosophy. Your philosophy is how to destroy community and be established in yourself, in your own glory, you know, just like a fish frying in its own juices. Yeah, and so therefore, then that's the position. And then we talk community. You know, it's like those advertisements of like, who are those big, Exxon? That's the big oil company? Exxon and those, you know, these global oil companies. Yes. And we're not talking about where it's selling on the ground and you put it into your car. We're talking about the global guys, the guys that actually find it, get it, and this and that, transport it. There, you see them making these six-page advertisements. You know, it's just all green and natural and lush and jungles and animals and smiling people and all this, and trying to point out that, yes, we have to protect the... They're the ones that, you know, have had the most major difficulties. Their product destroys the environment. Transporting it, they've ruined so many places. You know, drilling it out of the ground, then you know, they create the wobble in the earth. You know, all these, you know, Hiranyaksha, he was good at this. You know, so the whole thing is this. And then they're the ones saying, so that's the whole thing. People that are totally opposed to the actual foundation of community are talking community. You know? So, but it's not that they themselves are doing some devious plan here. We're not saying it's a corporate thing. We're just saying is that they're not understanding what community is. It means common values. That means everybody eats the same. Why do you say the Gujarat? Why do the Gujaratis hang out with the Gujaratis? Now, if one Gujarati goes over to another Gujarati's house, what will they get to eat? Gujarati stuff. They can talk Gujarati, right? They can dress Gujarati. How they're going to behave as Gujarati. How the boys and girls or their parents or everything like that, it's all going to be Gujarati. That's a community. But we're saying, no, everybody does whatever they like and no control and I don't want to eat this and that one doesn't. Why I should wear this and why this and that. Where is community? The only thing is it's a community of people who dislike authority and just do their own thing. So I can get together with you and what can we talk about? This political thing and that political thing and this one and that. And then we call that community. And we feel, oh, yes, so nice. I got to talk all kinds of negative nonsense with somebody. And so we have such a nice relationship. And this is what community is based on in the present contemporary environment of those who consider themselves intellectual and all those kinds of things. And then the people that actually have community, then people say, oh, they're backwards. You know, it's based on some social thing and, oh, that they're so restricted and this and that. And so you can see is that Maya is so clever that we're talking community, but in the process we're doing everything to get rid of it. Anything to destroy it. You know, in the 60s, 70s, within the movement, you had community. It means we went from our temple to another temple, exactly the same. Smelled the same. You just walked in, went to the temple commander. He's not your temple commander. Just said, what do we do? You're a brahmachari. Okay, do this, this, this. You were fine. Everybody was cool. But all that's backwards and this and that. We have to move forward and all that kind of stuff. And so you destroy community where there's nothing. And then you just go on talking community. In fact, they even say we don't even need temples. We just need community. Where does any acharya say we don't need the temple? How many people lived in Govindji Mandir? Right? No, practically nobody. Didis lived there. But everyone lived in the community. So how is it temple and community don't get together? So this is political. This is not communal. This is not religious or philosophical. It's just politics. Who's in control? In other words, the guys in the temple are a little bit old school, and the guys that are talking community are more modern, up to date, and they just don't see eye to eye. Because each one wants to control the people, each one wants to control the money. And while both of them are arguing with each other, then the preachers come through and take all the money and go away. And then they argue, and then they get together on that point. Yeah, you know, the preachers got to have the money. And so then they stop that, and then they get no money either. You know, so like that. It's just destructive. It's just you're dealing with illusion. So the whole point is that's why then by talking about what is community, talking about the importance of education, talking about these things, that then generates an interest. From that interest and that contemplation, then there actually a desire for that. Then that, from that desire, then you actually want to do something. And then you see from that discussion and that, a few people might do something. And then slowly, slowly, it becomes established enough after years. That's why development of philosophy and religion is there for those, the Brahminical class. Because the Brahmins can wait years. No one else can wait that long. Unless it's going to, you know, okay, I can wait years to become a billionaire. Like that. But I won't wait to get money. You know, like that. But, you know, I can wait for that kind of level. But, you know, it'll take generations. Yes?
I mean, we have an example in Christianity how the community was destroyed, basically, with the spirit of, now they call it individualism?
Yeah, individualism.
Means everybody is on their own.
Right.
So one of the popes, I don't remember his name, he was contemplating that the church is not getting enough funds.
Right.
And why? because everything stays within the community. Community those days were very large and strong, like clans.
Right.
So, you know, everybody was like a relative, and then the money stayed within the family.
Right.
So then he was thinking, okay, how we can get this money? Because it's not coming to the church.
Right.
So he conceived an idea and put it, like you're saying, in the air. And Pope means everybody listens to the Pope.
Right.
So he said, now that the girls and the boys, they shouldn't follow tradition of the family. They shouldn't marry those that the parents choose. They can do their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly, the families became very small. And then the money that nobody could inherit in the small families got to the church.
Mm. Okay, because it didn't go to the children, then it went to the...
Yeah, because it's just small. And a lot of quarrel in the small...
Yeah, but then that may work immediately when there is money and piety and all that, but with time, as these families aren't, then they don't generate as much and they're not likely to give it to the church. Like there's more chance, instead of giving to the church what's left over, that they're going to give it to some charity or something like that. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, they shoot themselves in the foot. So that's the difficulty. We have to be very, very careful. We can't look at things from any position other than transcendence. Because the transcendental position includes the engagement of the others. You look at them on their own, it looks like it's great. Now, you know, it's just like so many people talk about, yeah, we'll do this now, we'll get this result. But what about the future? Oh, the next generation can worry about the environment. We're doing this, we're getting our money, we're setting it up so we have a nice thing. Then the children will have some money. They can worry about the environment. You know? So it's one has to be very careful. Because all these things that they do, they're all in consideration of management. Like, you know, you were saying before, is that the understanding of reincarnation. That was also removed in the church doctrine because people just thought, oh, next life. Like sometimes you hear devotees say, you know, I'm not going to go back this life, maybe next life or this or that. You know, so Christians were saying the same, so they weren't getting so serious. So they thought, if we get rid of reincarnation, you only have this one shot, so then you have to get serious this one life. And so then it may work on one level, but then they have so many other problems because they can't explain why someone's in a good position and someone's in a bad. It's very unfair. So they create more problems. By trying to solve one problem, you create more. Like Prahlad Maharaj said, you know, the cure is worse than the disease.
We hope it's not happening now.
The point is it's Lord Chaitanya's mission. It will go on. Doesn't mean that we might go through a little bit of up and down. But you see, is that Gaudiya Math didn't really follow what was supposed to do. They made up their own idea. They decided on their own how. And where was the thing? It was all basically, you could say, administration. It sounds like it's spiritual, but everybody works together as a GBC. You know, the GBCs, they work together. And then, like that, then, you know, everything goes on. But then they have to sit in meetings, they have to discuss, and this and that, and so many ideas, you know, things like that. And because that, then one person, you know, then made the point, so why not we just go back to, like when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, have just one acharya, he tells us what to do, we do it, and Hari Bal. And so they accepted that. They dropped the GBC, they went for the one acharya, things didn't go well with him. The Mat split apart into, you know, three different things, all fighting with each other. And then within that, it was made that okay. Then you also had the thing is, you know, you have somebody who's established in the Mat and he's the Acharya. Then he has people he trains. And when they grow up to the point where people now start having faith in them and want to take initiation from them, they have to go start their own Mat. So that means now all your preachers from this one Mat go to the next and he has to start over again. So your machine, your preaching machinery can never become strong, that they all work together and they're all initiating and all that. And so these political, you know, how you say, administrative concepts completely destroyed the Mat. And so Prabhupada made the point, it's asar. As a machinery, it's useless. And you see is that they gain some momentum when they follow what Prabhupada does. You know, say what you want, but that's the reality. And so then only is there, because then you're following what's the natural form. But you have to, we make up our own ideas, and then it destroys things. So that's why one has to follow what the acharyas do. You know, that's the point. You make it up, we're imperfect. We will make mistakes. Cheating propensity, like you said before. They're saying all these things just to get money. But the whole point is technically speaking, that was the whole basis of the church, is that it doesn't need money. You know, you live simply and this and that, but if it's all about this big administration and this big hierarchy, then yes, then they need money. You know, but if they went down to just simple and all that, then people would be inspired, they give money again. You know? So that's the whole point, is that, I think it was that what do you call it? You know, it's just like you said, some pope. How many popes does anybody even remember? You know? But you take individual persons who lived that kind of traditional lifestyle, they're still famous, like Francis of Assisi. He was just poor. You know? No one wanted this old run-down church. He just set up there. There was no roof. He just set up. And then it's there. And at the end, you know, he was called up that he's a, what is it, heretic or this or that?
Yeah.
But it ended up, the Pope came down and offered his obeisances. Right? So that's the thing. Because that is the natural lifestyle. These other things, if they're helpful, great. But if they're not, the church is not dependent upon all that. So that's the whole point, is one has to understand. Bhakti is independent. All these other things are just ways to engage individuals in the Lord's service. That's all they're for. So having temples, having community and all that is just to give opportunity for people to take up devotional service and practice it in their life. It's not that, okay, we have the temple and so we need devotees. And what are the devotees going to do? They're going to go out and collect and all that and network and all that so that we have enough funds and facilities to maintain the temple. Okay, great. You're maintaining the temple. What's the temple for? Well, that because so that we can cultivate and maintain and then, you know, that self-sufficiency that we have our people and all that can arrange everything to organize things for the temple so that we can maintain the temple. Okay, great. You have a temple maintained. What's it for? What's the purpose? What's the goal? So that we can cut, you know, like this is just infinite regression. That's useless. The point is you're engaging people. It's there, you do it. If it's small, you know, Prabhupada's sitting there alone in the park. You know, or he has hundreds of temples. The point is he does the same thing. Whether it's one temple, no temple, or thousands, it doesn't matter. But we have to see is that, you know, you have all this stuff, then you have to be careful. It's all for Krishna. You use it for Krishna, it becomes perfect. So unless the community is being cultivated on how to connect their life to Krishna and make their life perfect in Krishna consciousness, it's not a community. And whoever's saying community has failed. Like that. So the one has to be very, very know what you're dealing with. It's just like you said, you know, it's all theory, but at the same time, isn't the other way theory too? You know, we're taking that. No, he's, you know, he's got to relax, he's got to do this, he's got to be himself. But isn't that a theory also? Isn't that the illusion that I can do that? The brahmachari's thinking, oh, you know, temple commander's telling me what to do, I get married, then, you know, I do whatever I want.
Yes.
It's an illusion. You know, oh, you know, I only have a little bit of money. If I go out and I'm grihastha, I'll have so much money and all that, and if I can use however I like, that's an illusion. Because you have responsibilities, you have duties, you have this and that. And so, you know, I'll have more time. You know, here, every time I want to sit down and read, the temple commander tells me to do something. It's like, you know, you sit down and read, and then your kid starts yelling. You know, so it's like, you know, it's not going to work. It's an illusion. So that's the whole point, is that the material world, that you're going to be happy here and satisfied here is an illusion. That's the reality. That's the, you know, like that. You can say it's a theory, but you look around you. Where is the exception? You know? It's just the way it is. You know, the Krishna made it. He says it's like that. The sages have been looking at it. You know, they were grihasthas and that, and they make their comments. It's like that. You know, so that's just the way it is. But the point is. And so for devotees, they take all that and engage it nicely in Krishna service. So how to engage household life in a service? Then the point is if you don't know what is service, who you are in that, how do you engage? So you can have a lecture on grihastha life, that's great. But the point is if you don't know how that connects to Krishna, then it's aparavidya. Right? You know, and what are the standards? What are they talking Mana Samhita here? Are they talking about Prabhupada's purports? Are they just talking, you know, what they've read off the internet? You know, if it works off the internet, where does it go back to? If it works, it's Veda. Where does it go back to? Where is Prabhupada mentioned? Take from there. So. Then you can do it. Like Prabhupada, his thing in League of Devotees was, you in your house have a program, invite 10 other families. You do your program. And you keep doing that. And then with time, they're going to be cultivated in Krishna consciousness. With time, they'll start each one of them doing their program with 10 invitees. So I do 10. The next 10, they're doing 100. The next generation, they're doing 1,000. The next 10,000. The next 100,000. Next 1,000,000. It goes up really fast. But you know, but where is that happening? Are there programs? When they say community, are there programs going on? What's going on? You know. So what makes a community?
As I remember when I joined in France, I have when some family were joining also, but it was same thing, no money, everybody living in the same place and sharing the same type of prasadam, and it was and having a group, of course, when the possibility like that, and devotees were more together, you know.
Yes.
And
yes.
But it was no money, no sense of ownership.
Yes, yes. Yes, so no, you can have like that. It means like in the temple where you have grihasthas, brahmacharis, everyone, you make all those facilities so everyone's taken care of. So basically everyone can do the maximum amount of service.
Yes, yes.
Like that. But when you, what, those who are not living in the temple, then they have to be, they have to have their occupations and these and that. But they still have to know how to, the philosophy. Like for many, they can't understand that okay, I'm doing this is obvious, it's Krishna consciousness, but then when I have to go, you know, go to work and at work and then, you know, pay all the bills, how does that have to do anything with Krishna? They can't see Krishna there. They're unable to see, as Prabhupada's always saying, Krishna's, everything's in Krishna. So therefore, you can see everything connected. They're not being trained in that. And so that's so important for the, we'll say, oh, that's so technical, you know, that's for intellectuals. No, that's for grihasthas. Grihasthas working with all this material energy, they should be able to see how it all connects to Krishna. It's for them. Otherwise, technical analysis of the material world, you know, who works with it other than the grihasthas? Right? They're the ones that work with the maximum amount. Brahmacharis work with some, but not so much. You know, they got their book box and they got their lunch and then they distribute the books. You know, have their place to go to the bathroom, have the place to eat lunch, and then where they go to get picked up to go back to the temple. You know, that's it. You know, so they deal, but not as much. So this knowledge, a little bit of it, they can keep themselves busy. But grihastha deals in such a wide range, they need the maximum understanding. It's not about the technical, it's the principle, because every grihastha will be working slightly different in what aspect of the material energy they're working with. So they should understand the principles that they, in their position, can connect what they're doing to Krishna. So Krishna gives that, the second verse, first two verses, you know, I mean the chatur shloki. First verse, he is everything. So there's nothing that you can say is, oh, that's not Krishna conscious. Then the second is, if any value you have, it's not connected to him, it's illusion. So what do I value? Why am I doing something? So like we said here, grihastha life for the individual he mentioned, his value is his time to relax and to be himself. These are values. But the point is unless you can connect those values to Krishna, it's an illusion, because who is he? And where is that relaxation? You know? So he has to see like that. And then Krishna as a person is beyond these. So therefore you're still worshiping the person who pervades everything, you know, including your values and the potency that makes everything work. And then how what's to do? At all times, all places, all circumstances, you're supposed to be able to see directly and indirectly Krishna in everything. That's what we're supposed to be teaching. And so people appreciate that, you can teach it. But you have to put it out there. It's just like Prabhupada always talked about Varnashram. So you have a few people that take it seriously, and a whole bunch of people that think, no, it's not important. Even though Prabhupada talks about it, you know, like half the time, it's still not important. You know, and why is it important? Because I don't understand it. And if I don't understand it, it can't be important, right? Isn't that the Buddhist philosophy? You know? The tree falls in a forest and no one's there to hear it. Did it make any sound? You know, so you know, I can speculate. It's God's laws. Of course it made sound. You don't think the birds and animals that were there didn't hear it? You know, so that's the whole thing. It's that Krishna's there. He's hearing it. He's seeing it. But we're thinking, no, it's all about me. I don't understand it, so it's not important. But Krishna made it. Why don't you understand it? Krishna made it. You don't try to do stuff that people that are dear to you, you know, do, then what's the point? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Jai.